Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa.
Your hosts for today are Susan Franzen, Gina McAndrews, and Paul Wearson. Welcome, Paul.
Well, welcome to you, Susan. Good morning.
We're especially happy that you are here to welcome Leanne Harder, who is with us to give her monthly Story County report.
Leanne, it's Paul. I'm glad you're back on for your report, and I want to thank you for reminding me about my taxes. I wrote a check on the 30th of March, and the sheriff hasn't come out to kick me off the farm, and I really credit you for sustaining me there. I paid my taxes thanks to your warning.
Well, we appreciate that very much, as do
thank you
all the other local governments. Well, I have quite a few bits of information to share this morning. I want to start out with just a brief call to action, if you will, for individuals to go in and take a quick survey. It's the Central Iowa Broadband Study. It's the internet survey. We're looking for all of Story County residents and businesses to participate in this study and take the survey. The purpose of the survey is to measure broadband internet availability and identify areas that do not currently meet consumer needs and expectations. Broadband is now how many of us have to succeed on a daily basis for our work and school, and so it's a key piece of our infrastructure. So that's what the study that Story County is part of with 10 other counties is all about. It's being managed through the Greater Des Moines Partnership. The survey is available on their website, but also the county's website, different social media sites throughout Story County, and you'll see flyers in different locations. It does take a few minutes to take the survey. It tests your speed. We ask that you take it from your home computer so that we have a good idea really where you're originating from, what the service is. If you have any questions on that or you need more information, contact me. I'll give you my contact information at the end. Then I have a few proclamations and celebrations that are happening this week and the entire month of April. I'll start with National Crime Victims Rights Week. Yesterday, the Board of Supervisors proclaimed this week, April 18th through the 24th, as National Crime Victims Rights Week. This year's theme is Support Victims, Build Trust, and Engage Communities. You can find more information about the National Crime Victims Rights Week, as well as various resources at the website, which is www.ovc.ojp.gov, and then just search by National Crime Victims Rights Week. Also, coming up in a couple weeks, May 2nd through the 8th, is Public Service Recognition Week. This week has been recognized since 1985, and it does begin the first Sunday of the month to honor people who serve our nation at all levels of government, at federal, state, county, local, and tribal government employees. Story County will recognize this week, and so if you check our social media during that week, you'll see some facts and figures about county government and just government in general and the impact of our lives. During that week, if you do know someone, a family or friend, or just if you're at the county building or city building, just thank those employees for their dedication. And then last, April, where we are right now, is National County Government Month. Story County joins other counties throughout the nation in celebrating National County Government Month during the month of April. It's an opportunity for us to showcase how the county achieves healthy, safe, and vibrant communities. We have a theme this year as well. It's called Counties Matter. And that really is based on the premise to demonstrate how counties help improve people's lives every day. especially local government workers on the front lines of the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. There is something new this year with the National and County Government Month celebration. NACO, which is the organization of all counties throughout the nation, has a I Love My County Because art contest. It's an opportunity for children and young adults ages 18 and under to create artwork during this month for NACO's 2021 to 2022 Counties Matter calendar. There's a list of eligibility criteria, rules, and submission guidelines at www.naco.org/NCGM. Just a few reminders, the Treasurer and Recorder's Office still are open by appointment only. There are some same-day appointment times available typically, but before you drive to Nevada, please check the website. There's a big red button that you can see right on our homepage that allows you to schedule an appointment. And then Story County is part of the Central Iowa Community Services Mental Health Disability Services Region. Starting July 1st, 2021, four additional counties will be joining that CICS region. It's easier to just say CICS. They include Cerro Gordo, Hancock, Webster, and Wright counties, bringing the entire region up to 15 members. And Story County, again, is part of that. There are some services available to individuals and businesses within those 15 counties. There's a 24-hour Your Life Iowa crisis line. And then they also now have CICS mobile response banners and yard signs available for display for your business and for just citizens who would like to have it in their yard to help share the resources within communities. If you're interested in getting one of those banners, you can reach out to the CICS Story County office at 515-663-2930. And then Your Life Iowa crisis line is 855-581-8111. It is a confidential line and available 24/7 for those needing those services. Some services from Story County Veterans Affairs. Veterans Affairs Director Brett McLean wanted me to speak a bit about airborne hazards and burn pit exposures. An airborne hazard refers to any sort of contaminant or potentially toxic substance that we are exposed through the air we breathe. While on active duty, military service members may have been exposed to a variety of airborne hazards. These include, but may not be limited to, the smoke and fumes from open burn pits, sand dust and particulate matter, general air pollution common in certain countries, fuel, aircraft exhaust, and other mechanical fumes, and smoke from oil well fires. VA Veterans Affairs understands that many veterans are especially concerned about exposure to the smoke and fumes generated specifically by open burn pits. In Iraq, Afghanistan, and other areas of the Southwest Asia theater of military operations, the open air combustion of trash and other waste and burn pits was a common practice. Depending on a variety of factors, you may experience health effects related to that exposure. If you do and you have any questions, you can call Aaron Rewerts at 956-2625 or Brett McLean at 956-2626 if you would like to discuss filing a claim. And then I said this last month, but a reminder, the VA of Central Iowa Mobile Medical Unit will be up on site at the Human Services Center coming up here. The unit allows veterans to schedule appointments to meet their VA healthcare provider in a secure and private virtual medical room. They have several services, primary care, respiratory, oncology, cardiology, physical therapy, it goes on and on, that are available for scheduling. Call 515-699-5999, extension 21501 for more information. Then we do still have a need for volunteers at Story County for boards and commissions. Right now we have openings on the asset board. persons interested in serving on boards and commissions can submit an application for appointment. It's on our website under storycountyiowa.gov, and then you go to the government tab, boards and commissions, or shoot me an email and I can send you the link. And then last, I say this each month, and I really encourage people to go in to our website and look for the Notify Me tab and sign up. That gives you a link to get the weekly agendas of the board supervisors and the various other boards and commissions. Know when we have alerts issued, a variety of different topics. Do that, or if you're on social media, you can see all of our happenings on our Facebook and Twitter at Story County, Iowa. And then we're also on Instagram at story_county85. Our YouTube channel includes all of our rebroadcasts of the Board of Supervisors meetings. And we are now starting to publish meeting recaps on our website. So you just want a quick snippet of what happened at the board meeting, you can go to storycountyiowa.gov.
Well, Leanne, once again, you've enlightened us. And let me tell you that you've changed my plans for the day completely. I love
Why
my
is that,
county
Paul?
Poster. Well, I'm going to start on my I Love My County poster, and I hope that I can cut and paste about 40 little hearts by noon. Okay.
Well, I can maybe send you some artwork if you need it, too.
Okay, that's tremendous. You made my day again.
That's what I go for.
Take care, Leanne.
You too. Have a great week, everyone, and thank you again for the opportunity.
Well, welcome to all of our listeners. We have a great show ending with a couple guests who will be giving us their personal reports about conditions in Central America and the immigration policies that we can change. And it sounds like we're going to start off this week with Earth Week segment. We have Pat Schlauerbaum bringing us Larry Stone from Northeast Iowa. Let's listen in to Pat and Larry.
Larry Stone, author and retired outdoor writer for the Des Moines Register and Clayton County Conservation Board. Thoughts on Earth Day Appreciation 2021?
You're making me feel old, Pat, because I was involved with the very first Earth Day in 1970 when I was a student at the University of Michigan. And I was just thinking about the different, how the issues are the same and some of them are different as far as what were the topics back then. The Alaska pipeline was a big controversy then. DDT and other persistent pesticides were still being in use and subsequently were banned. There were some major oil spills along the California coast. Oh, what else? The Cuyahoga River in Cleveland, Ohio caught fire because of pollution. Yeah. And so things like that got people to thinking more about we should be protecting our Earth. And we did a pretty good job for a while of making some changes. Sometimes I wonder if we're backsliding a little bit now, but I try to remain hopeful, yeah. I guess.
Backsliding, what would be a couple of those issues? I know mining is pretty near and dear to your concerns.
So, well, and for example, it was about that time that the Boundary Waters canoe area was being protected from, opening up of development and outboard motors and that kind of thing and logging. But now, one of the things that is happening up in the Boundary Waters canoe area or near the Boundary Waters canoe area is the proposal for a nickel sulfide mine in the watershed of the Boundary Waters. And not in the Boundary Waters itself. And what will that open up? These mines have a history of really being pollution prone. Will we keep away from that or not? So, and closer to home, almost literally in my backyard in Clayton County, we have frac sand mining. The bluffs along the Mississippi River have a unique sand that is used in the fracking process, which is taken out of the Mississippi River bluffs, shipped across the country to North Dakota, Oklahoma, stuck back in the ground to open up cracks in the rocks to let out more natural gas and fossil fuels. somehow it's hard for me to get my head around how all that makes sense, but apparently it must. Will that be changing and being phased out as we get more and more away from fossil fuels and more to renewable energy? I hope so. Yeah. Lots of dilemmas like that.
Well, and yeah, you've framed it very well, Larry Stone. Here in Iowa, any special activities you have planned with your family or loved ones?
Just getting out and enjoying the world around us and the world outdoors. And in fact, that's a good segue into a quote from one of my favorite outdoor writers, Robin Wall Kimmerer. I don't know if you've heard that name. She's an indigenous woman from upstate New York, a plant ecologist, wrote a book called Braiding Sweetgrass and another book or two. But she says, even a wounded world is feeding us. Even a wounded world holds us, giving us moments of wonder and joy. I choose joy over despair, not because I have my head in the sand, but because joy is what the earth gives me daily, and I must return the gift. So I'm going to go out and get some joy from the wildflowers that are blooming around our around Northeast Iowa, everywhere in the state right now, and try to give back a little bit of a gift of just appreciating what the earth is providing to us.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yes, share the joyful areas of Iowa and the universe with family and friends this Earth Day Appreciation 2021. I love it.
And there are a lot of ways, just taking a wildflower hike, which is something I do. My wife, Margaret, and I like to do almost daily. Or to go out, as I did just about dark last night, to listen to see what I could hear. Well, I had hoped to hear woodcock doing their display. I didn't happen to, but I did hear barred owls, coyotes, Canada geese, robins, cardinals, and I think maybe way in the distance a chorus frog or two, and those types of things you can just enjoy, and it's relaxing, calming, I guess, to appreciate those bits of nature.
Well, and thank you for sharing those joyful moments, Larry Stone. Enjoy your walks with Margaret and all your friends and family there in Clayton County.
So, we'll do, and I appreciate you reaching out, and I know you will share some of those outdoor joys as well.
Well, absolutely. Still kind of doing this go-between role with the radio station and how we can best proceed in a sustainable manner. And thanks for pointing out the need for experiencing and appreciating and feeling grateful for all the joyful activities. Because sometimes we kind of forget. We get things a little too untipped.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, Story City Ames, with your regular host, Gina McAndrews and Franson, with a lot of help from Mike Murphy, Paul Wilson, and Pat Schlarbaum, who had great reminiscences from Larry Stone in Northeast Iowa. Larry was recalling the first Earth Day, what inspired it, and what has changed in the subsequent 50 years. On Saturday, April 24th, KHOI will bring special programs in a celebration of Earth Day Appreciation through a partnership between the City of Ames and KHOI Community Radio, the second virtual Earth Day event will be broadcast from 7:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. The all-day Earth Day Appreciation Radio Special will feature City of Ames staff co-hosting with KHOI community radio hosts.
Tune in to KHOI FM Community Radio at 89.1, or you can stream it at www.khoifm.org for Earth Day Appreciation. And you can hear about sustainability efforts that are going on throughout the county. This year is also special for Ames because we have just received the Iowa River City Award from Iowa Rivers Revival. To tell us what this all means, we have with us Sarah Carmichael, who's the Executive Director of the Iowa Rivers Revival. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the Iowa Rivers Revival and how it got formed and how you got involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have been doing this for quite a while now. This is the 15th Rivertown of the Year award that we are giving. So it's the past 13 years we've been giving this award out. 2 years we did two awards, one for River City of the Year award and Rivertown of the Year award. And it's a great opportunity for us and the state to recognize the great work that has been done in towns and cities across Iowa on their rivers and making sure that people understand how important they are. So there's different types of criteria that goes along with this award, including, you know, the different partnerships that the city does, the different ways that they're improving their water quality and stormwater protection initiatives, if they're able to provide river access points for the community and for people in general. Specifically for Ames, we're really excited about the fact that they were able to mitigate their dams and turn the dam on the South Skunk River into a white water park. So they've done some great work, and we're really excited to recognize all their hard work as the city and as different nonprofits in the area have done some great educational pieces for the river specifically and its tributaries. So we're really excited to be able to present this to the City of Ames.
Yes, Ames is really excited. So how long has the Iowa Rivers has been around for 15 years? And how did it start it?
That's a great question. So yeah, the award's been around for 13, 15 years, but we started as an organization back in 2006 when there was a group of really dedicated individuals, people from state agencies and from nonprofits. They kind of gathered together and had this conference and realized that there was no state resource specifically dedicated to rivers and river health. So they kind of came together and realized that there was a need. So Iowa Rivers Revival was kind of formed from that. And it was an organization and still is an organization committed to river advocacy, conservation, education. And we were able to become a certified nonprofit in 2009.
So besides the award, what else, what other events and what other activities do you have going on?
So we have the award, but we also do a lot of advocacy at the State House during session, where we are making sure that any state funding is appropriated, is given appropriately, to make sure that our rivers and our water trails get enough funding or get more funding. We always advocate for more funding. And then we track any bills or policy that comes down through legislators to make sure it's not going to have a negative impact. And we, you know, advocate for our rivers, and we make sure our members are aware of what's going on a weekly basis. Off session or during the summer and fall times, we are still advocating and still working with legislators by taking them on paddling trips and working with the DNR to make sure that people are aware and have access to their rivers and water trails. We also have opportunities for stream cleanups throughout the state. We have a section here in Des Moines that we work, we clean up a lot throughout the year. We do different trainings and workshops, both for professional and for the general public, on river restoration techniques. So making sure that people understand why rivers need to be restored back to kind of how they were when Iowa was all prairie. So making sure that people get that education. So we are an advocacy and education-based nonprofit. So we're able to provide that throughout the year.
And where do people find, you know, like the information on the events that are going to take place in their area? And
That's a great question. So we do have a website, iowarivers.org, but also social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. We post all the time and update our events page. But with session coming to a close here shortly, we are doing weekly action alerts. So we have a listserv people can sign up for. And then we have monthly e-newsletters people can get that kind of just has general information about what's happening in Iowa.
And so when do you hand out the awards? Is there a big ceremony or event for that?
Yes, there is. So the city of Ames is doing a ribbon cutting ceremony for the Whitewater Park on May 1st. And the event is from 10 to 12. From 10 to 10:30 is when all the speakers will be happening. And that's when we will be presenting the award to the city. We are going to be live streaming that. It will be an outside event if people can join us. But if people can't, we will have that on our Facebook live stream. People can join that way. But it's a great opportunity for people to come down and see the area and see the great work that's been done. It's at the North River Valley Park on May 1st.
I know Dan Haug, he works with the Watershed Education for the Prairie Rivers of RC&D. How are the watersheds? How do you work with them? And how do you work with watersheds and folks who work on watersheds?
Yeah, that's a great question. They are definitely a strong partner of ours. They actually were the ones to submit the application with the city of Ames for this award. So we know them through that, but also through some other partnerships that we've created for specifically around IWIL and funding the trust. But with watersheds and rivers, they're interconnected. So watersheds are kind of this big area of land that kind of collects all the rainwater or surface water or groundwater, and it drains into a river, and those rivers empty into a bigger river, and then it empties into the Mississippi or the Missouri, and then it flows down into the Gulf of Mexico. So our rivers are highly connected. We have over 70,000 miles of stream here in Iowa, and so whatever happens on land throughout the watershed is going to impact our rivers.
And so how did you get involved with rivers and water and the Iowa Rivers Revival?
Yeah. So I actually started with the organization a year ago, February. So 2020 was a very unique year for me to start, but didn't realize that. And it's been an interesting year, and we're very excited to kind of start offering events now more in person, and excited to be able to kind of travel the state and meet our partners and meet more people that are getting out onto the river. It's going to be a great 2021. We do have a couple, like I mentioned, a couple events happening already. So stay tuned for those dates to come out and for other things to happen.
So what's currently on the agenda besides the May 1st event?
Yeah, so we have National Canoe Day is an exciting day for us, June 26th. We're hoping to partner with some breweries around the state and kind of do some connections through that. We have a toolbox training, which is for professionals that want to restore rivers. It's a week-long workshop. Those are coming up late summer, early fall. And we have the River Town of the Year award celebration, of course. We'll have there's a Lake Okoboji Blue Water Festival that we'll be at, some events in Mitchell County and on the Maquoketa River. So we'll be traveling the state and doing some education.
How many people work in your organization?
That's a great question. So it's just me. I am the full-time employee. We do have a board of 10. So they are really active and we meet a lot. And, you know, they help guide the organization. But yeah, it's just me right now.
Is KHOI Community Radio, and your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen, celebrating Earth Week. For our final segment, we are shifting to people who live on the Earth, specifically migrant children. Many people have expressed concern as Governor Reynolds made the statement, Iowa doesn't have the capacity to take in migrant children in federal custody during the surge of people seeking to enter the U.S. This is not our problem. We don't have the facilities. We are not set up to do that. This is not our problem. This is the president's problem. He is the one that opened the borders. He needs to be responsible for this, and he needs to stop it, said our governor. Iowa already has issues with trying to place current foster children into homes, Reynolds said. Iowa Department of Human Services Director Kelly Garcia responded that, quote, Iowa is not in a position to take unaccompanied minors at this time, unquote, according to emails provided by the department to the Des Moines Register. Reynolds has gotten a lot of criticism for her position, but there certainly are organizations in Iowa that are offering to help. Some of these are 1,000 Kids for Iowa, the Catholic Worker House in Iowa City, and Mike says perhaps in Des Moines, Iowa Migrant Movement for Justice, and the American Friends Service Committee. There are undoubtedly many churches that have members actively involved. We have a couple of members from the Ames UCC, United Church of Christ, who have direct experience with the problems that led people to seek asylum. They are Linda Hansen, who has lived in Honduras, and Jan Flora, Professor Emeritus in Sociology at ISU, who visited Guatemala with the Washington Office on Latin America in 2019. Thank you, Linda and Jan, for being with us today.
For having us.
Nice to be here.
I guess we'll start with our questions, though, with Linda. What were your observations of life in Honduras when you lived there?
We lived there as mission partners with the United Church of Christ from 2004 to 9. I think that the most striking thing to me was just the level of poverty was appalling. There were kind of two faces of poverty. There was rural poverty. These are tiny villages at the ends of long dirt roads with people living in clay huts and dirt floors and no electricity and no sanitation, no running water. They collect firewood every day and they stoke their wood-burning stoves to cook their meal of beans, rice, and tortillas three times a day. And that was one phase of it. And then the urban poverty, they had probably running water and some sanitation, but the sewer system ran in canals through their village. It smelled really bad. And education was compulsory through sixth grade. After that, you had to pay for it. I mean, I guess I'm in particular thinking of why children would be immigrating now. What is it that drives that? And what we saw was children at age 12 just had no opportunity. They couldn't go to school because they couldn't afford it and it wasn't paid for. They had to pay for it. They couldn't compete in a job market with high unemployment because they were 12. And so they tended to join gangs because gangs provided them with food, something to eat, and a family, a social group. And so then they became involved very early in the drug culture and in a culture of violence. So that context of this grinding poverty, gangs controlling neighborhoods, a corrupt government. The current president was almost assuredly not really elected and stole the election and then ran for re-election, which is against the Honduran constitution. Completely corrupt. His brother was just sentenced to life in prison in the United States for narco trafficking. And there's no question that the current president is involved in that. Violence against women is rampant. Like being raped as a Honduran woman is the norm. So just that whole context, no access to healthcare if you live in a village, certainly, and limited access if you live in the city. And then it's pretty poor quality. We went to the public hospitals and they were pretty appalling. So just this overall hopelessness especially for children, you know, the teenagers, that they just don't have any opportunity. So their parents make the decision, a lot of parents might, to have their children seek an opportunity elsewhere. And so they will bring them to the United States, or they will have them go to the United States to try to get healthcare and education and safety and a better life than they can have in Honduras.
This, of course, does raise the issues. That's quite a leap for these people, for us to deal with, because if they've already been approached by gangs. Now, I understood that you were planning to go back to Honduras. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're leaving in May to go back, and that is correct. We're going back in May, and the place we're going to live is called Omoa, which is, at least I think that's where we're going to live, which is right over the Guatemalan border. And the church there asked us to work with people who had tried to immigrate to the United States and were denied entry and now are coming back. And they return with a lot of medical problems and a lot of emotional problems, because this was kind of their hope, was to be able to go somewhere where their children could be safe. Now on top of that, we have, back in November, Honduras was hit with two category 4 to 5 hurricanes within 2 weeks of each other, Eta and Iota. And so the whole northern coast where we're going to be was pretty devastated by these hurricanes. So you also have landslides and roads destroyed.
a lot of homelessness in that area, including in Omoa, where they were kind of the entry point for people coming back from the United States. And so the hurricanes have really devastated the northern coast, and people are living in shelter in churches and schools. So if schools aren't operating, kids aren't going to school, and they're living in shelters, and then we have COVID. And so there's no mass vaccine campaigns yet in Honduras. A few people in healthcare have been vaccinated, but the general population has not. And they're living in shelters, and so they're getting COVID and dying. So it just is a pretty pretty traumatized part of the country right now, that northern coast. That's what we're going to go and work with, try to see what we can do.
Let's turn to Jan. It sounds like pretty hopeless, actually. Jan, what do you have to say?
I think there's some degree of hope. We hope that with President Biden in the White House, that eventually they'll get this straightened out. But I think this is a long-term problem. The roots go all the way back to the Central American wars of the 1970s and 80s. We've had a bipartisan policy that has essentially ignored the really serious problems. And so I think, sorry, I'm drinking my morning coffee and trying to get rid of my frog in this early morning. So I think that there's really a great need for major changes in policy so that the Central American countries, the so-called Northern Triangle of Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, can essentially get rid of corruption and begin to address some of the issues that Linda talked about within their own countries. I think Linda and her husband Bruce are very brave people because they're going to have their hands full. We saw a recent AP article from Omoa, the community that they're going to, and it said that they had during the time the reporter was there, there were 6 buses of Hondurans who arrived from Guatemala. They were being sent back. So at the present time, there is that the U.S. is basically following many of the policies that Trump had in place in terms of, and actually this began in the Obama presidency, where we essentially paid the governments of Guatemala and Mexico to return people to their home countries. The numbers of unaccompanied children and families that are arriving in Mexico and at the U.S. border is extremely high. In March, there were almost 19,000 unaccompanied children who arrived, and 53,000 people who were in families. That doesn't include all the people who were turned back and sent back to Guatemala and Honduras in particular.
We were told, Jan, that through this community of Omoa, which is about a population of 7,000, that they're getting 8,000 to 10,000 people returned every week. Half of their population is currently homeless from the hurricanes that happened in November, which I think I didn't mention.
Yeah. So, and they've closed the schools, as I understand, so that they have a place to accommodate the refugees. The hopeful part is that there is a push on the part of our government to make sure that the children don't remain with the Customs and Border Patrol. They're required to turn them over to Health and Human Services within 72 hours. And they're still violating that, but they're making efforts to find adequate housing and personnel to care for these children once they're turned over to HHS.
The thing with that, Jan, is that parents are parents, right? And they care about their kids, and so they are accompanying their children to the border. Mm-hmm. And hearing from my friends in Honduras that they know what to do. They figure it out. They figure out the system and what works. Because they are a resilient people, and they are people with hope for their children. So they are accompanying them to the border, and then they're telling their children, you go on across. Here's a piece of paper with your auntie's name in it who lives in mm-hmm. Iowa, and we'll try to sneak across later and join you. And that's exactly what is happening, because children are being allowed across and they want their children to have that opportunity.
I think another aspect of it is that there are an awful lot of people of goodwill who, not through their governments, but individually, are helping out. When I was in Guatemala, we visited a couple of Casa de Migrante homes for migrants that were housing Hondurans who were coming through Guatemala on their way to Mexico and to the U.S. There are folks on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border who are scrambling to help out folks. And we have a group in Ames that's called ASIP, the Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partnership, that in spite of the governor's statement, is working to bring unaccompanied children or as well as adults to Iowa to allow them to join family members in Iowa. So I think there's this huge, tremendous goodwill. The other thing that is really important is that even though there have been this tremendous surge of people coming into the U.S., it is not because Biden has been so welcoming to them, but it's simply the issues that Linda has talked about, the push factors rather than the pull factors.
This is just the beginning of a conversation that probably has to do with, I understood Vice President Harris was going to those countries. Earlier, I had heard that we sent money, but it was being siphoned off by the corrupt government and actually used for weapons to attack, control the members in very unpleasant ways. And so that money without active people is not a solution.
Yeah, that's a pretty common pattern. That we saw that when we were there too. Money is sent for something like hurricane relief, for example. They've been sending money for hurricane relief. The government's so corrupt that they line their pockets with it, does not reach the people. And the way that it best reaches the people is through certain nonprofits. Sometimes the nonprofits were corrupt too, but we found that working through nonprofits rather than the government, because the government was just so corrupt.
We're drawing to the close of our hour. Thank you both for coming and giving us some insight into this problem that's obviously on many levels already a problem for Iowa. And thank you for your work. And it's time to go.
I hope you have a safe trip to Honduras, Linda. Thank you, Jan.
She worked all night long. She cleaned up six floors. Her working day is now a beginning. He worked all day long. He picked up the crops. His swollen fingers are still bleeding. They work in the offices and serve in the restaurants. These hands keep lifting America. Some came from the south, some came from afar. Tell me, who's the Native American? Did you forget we're human? Don't you know we are the same? Did you forget you're my sister, my brother? Don't you feel we share your pain? You forget we're human. Don't you know we are the same? Did you forget you're my sister, my brother? Don't you feel we share your pain? Out of the shadows, we're walking together and into the light. Out of the shadows, we're walking together and into the light. Estamos unidos, marchemos juntos hacia la luz. Estados unidos, marchemos juntos hacia la luz. My brother, don't you know we feel your pain? Did you forget?
You've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during our program today. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. today. Don't forget to listen in on Saturday, April 24th, when KHOI will bring special programs in a celebration of Earth Appreciation Day. Through a partnership between the City of Ames and KHOI Community Radio, the second virtual Earth Day event will be broadcast 7:45 to 6 p.m. The all-day Earth Day Appreciation Radio special will feature City of Ames staff co-hosting with KHOI Community Radio hosts.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Hosts were Gina McAndrew, Susan Franzen, Paul Wearson, Pat Flarbaum, and guests were Leanne Harder, Larry Stone, Sarah Carmichael, Linda Hansen, and Jan Flora. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Blue Boat Home by Peter Mayer, the choral version.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, please contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or you can contact us through our website at khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member, or you can also renew your membership today. Just go to our website and hit the yellow Donate Become a Member button. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI presents Chad Elliott and Bo Ramsey at Stevens Auditorium. May 9th at 5 p.m. Come to enjoy the music and to support KHOI. Live streaming for home viewing will also be available. Tickets and live stream links can be purchased online at khoifm.org. Safety protocols will be in place with physical distancing in the seated areas and enhanced disinfecting procedures. Masks will be required unless actively eating or drinking. Thank you to Chad Elliott and Bo Ramsey for supporting community radio. That I could stay. See why Stevens is a co-sponsor of this event. Funding for this concert provided by the Ames Commission on the Arts.